Dr. Metzick in studio from the practice with us this afternoon. How you doing, Doc? What's up, brother?
I'm doing good. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas. Boy, I had a scare on Friday night. Started seeing weird colors. I wasn't taking anything.
It sounds like in the 60s and something that started with L and ended with D.
I wasn't taking anything. Nobody started seeing strange color combinations. It was basically only on the television or around lights. And you know me. We've talked about this. I'm scared to death that I'm having a stroke every single day. There's something. I'm convinced I'm having. So Laura called the paramedics, and they came, and they said that my blood pressure was really low. It was like something like 90 over 50 or something like that. And it's normally, what is my blood pressure normally? 149, 150 over 80 or over 90 or something like that. So that was a real drop. Would that cause, they said that would cause me to see weird hallucinations.
Several things. First of all, when your blood pressure drops, a lot of people don't realize that you if your blood pressure drops, it can change what's called circulation to the brain.
Okay.
But you have to be very, very careful with that. All people who have normal brain function have what's called autoregulation. That's a big word for saying that if your pressure is down on the basement or real high, you will have the same brain perfusion of blood no matter what.
That's
called autoregulation. Now, in some brain tumors or masses or edema or certain mental or brain illnesses, mm-hmm. you'll lose that. But those are rare. Rare jazz. So the first thing that goes through my mind, like we're talking about this, is not that your blood pressure is low, because there's autoregulation, all right, unless you have some kind of weird thing going on. You have autoregulation, it won't make a difference, but you have to ask why. And one of the things you have to worry about is, do you have a blockage in the carotid arteries so that there's a lack of perfusion? Do you follow?
So let's say
your carotid artery should be 100% radius, and now you've got a 90% blockage.
Wow.
And you're doing fine with a normal blood pressure with a pretty good head, and you don't have any problems. But then your pressure drops, and there's not enough perfusion through that blocked carotid artery because there's stenosis, because you have a lot of calcium blockage. Then you can get ischemia. And what you were describing to me is really like we call posterior fossa ischemia, of the part where you see in the brain. And that, to me, is not the pressure that's low, but why. And probably the one of the biggest shocks of my life, this is years ago, but I went over to Africa, to Ghana, to one of the medical schools over there for about 3 weeks to teach and help in their medical school. And then in the weekends, we go out to these African villages, all right, where they're, you know, these people have never seen a doctor in their life. And
yeah,
I mean, they're, you know, no they're kidding. Living, you know, I mean, it's really wild, you know, out in the middle of anywhere. And you, these people, you know, they'd have a normal blood pressure of 40 over 20. I mean, here we'd put him in the ICU. Now you go into town in the cities, and their blood pressure is just like ours here. It's the same. But in these villages, you know, I mean, it was common to see 40 over 20, 40 over 15, and they're smiling, talking. Just, what's wrong, doc? What are you concerned
why
about?
Why is that?
Well, because there's very little stresses. There are very few stressors in their life. So they have this low blood pressure, and yet their brain perfusion is normal.
My God, they're all living out in the middle of the freaking Serengeti or something, you know?
And it just totally, I mean, it's totally against our way of thinking of Western medicine, you know what I mean? But once you start to see this and you realize what our stressors in our lives have to do with, there's a definite part. We don't know it's all stressors. It can be diet. It can be a whole bunch of things. But there's things in our lifestyle that literally make a major difference with our blood pressure.
So it pays to be a pygmy living out in the middle of the jungle somewhere. You say it's their lifestyle?
Well, I think we don't know, you know, the fact of the matter is we really don't know, Jez, why this happens, all right? It's well documented. It's what, you know, everybody knows about it in medicine. But the bigger issue is why. And there's a whole bunch of things. It could be diet. It's definitely stressors in their life, all right? They live a totally unstressed life kind of style. It's a different. No time constraints. They have no money constraints. They have, you know, their relationships are simple. Everything is totally.
See, that's
different.
What I was kind of driving at, because you every time you ask me, sir, are you stressed out? You're stressed out about anything? And it's always the same thing. It's always money. If I'm stressed out about anything, it's money.
And yet we have more money than they do by a long shot.
God, no kidding.
Yeah.
but my mortgage just went.
My health insurance premium was just...
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, imagine this, Jess. Imagine that you could... there's a whole area called neuroprotective science. Okay. There's a whole area of medicine where we do things, certain things we do or don't do, that literally protect our brain. From dementia and from a lot of neurodegenerative things. And it's amazing. We probably should talk about that because it's amazing.
Like Alzheimer's and things.
Alzheimer's disease, all that kind of stuff.
See, that's another thing I'm always scared about, Doc. You know me. We've had this discussion before. You think I'm just neurotic, but I feel like I forget stuff. Well, I'll be sitting here on the air talking with Chris, and I've got a point to make, and then I suddenly get kind of, you know, I veer off.
I'm sorry, what was that? What'd you say?
and I'm talking about something else, and I sit there and I say, what was I just talking about? And I think I'm getting that early Alzheimer's. What do you think?
Let's go. There's 10 things, Jazz, that doctors look for.
Okay.
And one thing is a memory loss that is disrupting your daily life. Okay. All right? Everybody, as we get older, we get memory loss issues. And that's normal. It's part of aging.
Okay.
Who cares? All right? Another thing is problems in solving problems or planning things in your life, all right?
Okay.
Number two.
I put things off.
Oh, that's normal. That's not Alzheimer's.
All right.
Number three is you have difficulty in completing a familiar task, something you always do and now you can't do it kind of thing.
I just don't want to.
That's a different story.
Clean up the cat box. I mean, every time Laura asks me to clean up the
people who get confused with time or where they're at. You know, well, I thought I was at my home, and I'm really at this grocery store kind of
thing. Wow, that's freaky weird. No, that's never happened to me.
Trouble with understanding visual or spatial relationships. And that's a good
one. What do you mean by that?
What that means is essentially you're looking at a dog, and you think that you've got a mouse there or something. We've talked about that with
Right. My mother had that problem.
Yeah, and that's part of a dementia. All right. problems with speaking or writing, especially new types of words or new concepts. Misplacing things, and you can't go back and retrace your places.
Oh,
now, everybody misplaces stuff, but you can't. You lose something, and you can't retrace where it was. That's a different thing.
I have those.
All right. poor judgment. All right.
Wow, I live that. Yeah. I'm the poster boy for that, I'll tell you right now.
The other thing is a subtle thing. Two things. People who have early dementia, they start to withdraw from work or social activities. And you'll see they kind of all of a sudden they want to be by themselves kind of thing. They're withdrawing. Hmm. And that's a sort of a tip-off socially that they should be looked at. And the last thing, their personality changes. All right? You know, they used to be... happy go lucky kind of person, and all of a sudden they're big time anxiety or getting angry or
worried about
something. This is something, this is a different guy kind of thing.
Yeah.
Those are 10 little things that we kind of watch for dementia, and they're common in all of us, but it's not one thing.
Well, is dementia and Alzheimer's is it the same thing?
Well, Alzheimer's is one form of dementia. All right.
Okay.
Roughly 5.5 million, I think 5.6 million, if I remember now, the studies have dementia. In fact, have Alzheimer's. In fact, if you look at after age 65, 1 in 8. One in eight people will develop Alzheimer's disease. I mean, that's major. All right, 1 in 8. So there's a whole bunch of these what we call neuroprotective things. It's called an area called neuroprotective medicine, where there's a bunch of things that we can do to prevent or forestall those dementia processes coming on.
Wow.
Interesting part of medicine.
It's scary, too. You know, it really is.
I tell people the hardest thing you will ever see is looking after a loved one, a parent or someone that who's going through a dementia process. And it's very, we can say grandpa isn't there. But those family members looking after these people, it's very, very tough.
My mother, God rest her soul, she would sit there and she would call me. She'd say, Jazz, come in here. Jazz, come here. I'd be in the other room. She'd had her leg amputated because of her diabetes. And she'd be sitting in her chair over by the TV. And she'd say, there it is. There it is again. And she'd point over to the couch. I'd say, there's what, mother? She was 70, about 74 years old. And I'd say, what? What's over there? And she'd say, it's that squirrel. I keep telling you, that squirrel was in the bathroom earlier this morning, and now it's sitting right there.
See, visuospatial hallucinations.
Yeah. And you know what it was? It was a little stuffed animal. It wasn't even a stuffed squirrel. Yeah. It was a little teddy bear.
Yeah, that's a sign that there's a dementia process going on.
And that's what was happening to her. Yeah. And she would go to dialysis 3 days a week, and on a couple of occasions they would call either my sister or myself to come pick her up and take her to the hospital because they thought she was having a stroke. And she was exhibiting all of the signs, the visual signs that these little, you know, these dialysis people, they're not doctors or real nurses very much. And so they didn't know. So we would come take her to the hospital, put her through ER, and there's nothing. I don't know if she was imagining that, do you think?
What happens to a lot of dialysis patients, Janice, is that I want you to think when you hook yourself up to, if somebody hooks you up to a dialysis machine, and essentially you're through a bunch of osmotic processes and membranes, you're essentially straining or pulling out water and fluid and creatinine and blood urea nitrogen out of your blood, all right, and a bunch of other things too. So what happens is in the brain, you have this massive shift of fluid across your membranes in the brain. And it is what happens. It's called a dialysis disequilibrium syndrome. But essentially, it's quite common. People who are going through dialysis, and they will get screwy, all right, especially if they dialyze them against too high a gradient or too fast, essentially.
I see.
You know, they're trying to, you know, they want them to dialyze in 2 hours instead of 5 hours kind of thing. And they push the gradients and they get into trouble with this. And that's a lot of the art of the, you know, dialysis doctor to set that up so that doesn't happen. But they can get these disequilibrium syndromes. And you can think they're having a stroke. And give them a few hours and they're back to
normal.
And they're
fine.
And they're fine. And it really has to do with all these fluid and electrolyte shifts in the brain that's doing it.
Wow. I always thought there was something, you know, what... never really, my sister and I never really talked about those times. She's a nurse, but we never really thought that much that there was something could be related to the, because it never happened at home. It only happened when she was at Dallas. Yeah. But like, you know, it's 5-6 hours. Yeah. You're sitting in that chair 3 days a week. Sure. There's a lot of time to invest.
You know, the temptation in dialysis, you know, want to push them through quicker and quicker, get more business kind of thing, and to use too high a gradient and try to dialyze, get the fluid off too fast, and that's where you get in trouble. Oh.
What other forms of dementia are there? Specifically, what are you seeing trending in Kern County?
Well, Alzheimer's is probably the most common, all right? Everybody knows about it. And there's all sorts of different kinds of dementia, from just plain vascular dementia from strokes and complicated with diabetes, hypertension, all that kind of stuff. One thing that's interesting about Kern County, Jazz, in fact, I had a friend of ours, a couple, and he ended up with, he went from 6 months being normal to 6 months later essentially dying from a rapidly progressive dementia called Jacob Creutzfeldt's. Think of it much like mad cow disease. And the interesting thing about this, and this is why I thought we'd bring up and go over all these things, that what you can do to keep your brain healthy. It doesn't say this will never happen to you. But if you look, there's 44 cases of Jacob Creutzfeldt disease in California. 18 of those every year are in Kern County.
Wow.
That's a wow kind of thing. So now, these things that we're going to mention, Jazz, I want to be real upfront. Just because these are all things that are being shown to be neuroprotective. But just because you do them doesn't mean to say you won't get a dementia, all right? In fact, Jacob Creutzfeldt's is probably from eating contaminated sort of products. But these things are very, very good for forestalling or preventing or keeping your brain healthy, all right? The first one is what we call keeping your acetylcholine levels up. And in fact, most of the medicines like Aricept, Exelon, all these medicines are all what's called acetylcholinesterase inhibitors. But what they do is keep your acetylcholine levels high in your brain. The other thing that you can do, a lot of people don't know this, but there are several kinds of, for instance, there's a club moss called Locopedium that you can buy in like the health food stores that will increase acetylcholine.
Is that a pill or?
No, it's a, you know, it can be. In fact, you can buy it as a pill. The other thing is certain types of mushrooms. This is amazing to me. But there's a mushroom called Hadawia long pipes mushrooms. But bottom line, these mushrooms, Jazz, can increase your acetylcholine between 10 and 42%.
Wow.
You know, this was just published in something called
like a
Journal
mushroom.
Of Phytoplasmics.
Is this something you find in the store?
Yeah. It would be hard to find this type of mushroom. By the way, all mushrooms have some effect.
Online, though, probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All mushrooms have some effect, by the way, but some more than others. So this one has probably the most. the other thing, some natural things, flavonoids like chrysin, all right, have been from passion foods. Chamomile tea, by the way, also has some effect on increasing your acetylcholine levels. Another thing that a lot of people don't realize and is important is I'm a strong believer in staying away from artificial sweeteners. Now, artificial sweeteners don't cause dementia, but they have a definite effect on neurochemistry. All these artificial sweeteners are essentially neurotransmitter analogs.
How about Stevia? Is that considered to be a
no? That's
artificial?
A little bit different.
Okay.
All right. Lithium. We've mentioned lithium before, but lithium is neuroprotective. And how? About 30 milligrams a day. And a lot of life extension doctors take 30 milligrams of lithium every day. It's felt to be at that dose very safe, very cheap. In fact, you can buy 120 milligram lithium tablet over the counter and cut it in four, and you've got 30 milligrams. It's a very minor dose, but it's felt to be neuroprotective. That's kind of neat. I like that because it's cheap and safe.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure that all depressions and problems with what we call serotonin deficiencies are treated, because the risk of dementia just goes exponentially up if you have depression. That's not treated. And that's important, especially people who have chronic depressive illnesses. You know, chronic sleep disturbance would be another way of thinking. If you've got a chronic sleep disturbance, you can't sleep because you have to drink or you have to take a pill or something. The issue is not that, but why?
Why?
Why? And if it is a depression issue, that needs to be treated, because literally that will increase the risk of dementia multiple. Exercise, Jess. Exercise. Plain exercise lowers the risk of dementia. We don't think of that.
Never had.
No. stopping smoking makes sense. Treatment of hypertension and cholesterol. We've mentioned before on the show about making sure one time every demented person needs to have a CAT scan to make sure you don't have normal pressure hydrocephalus, because it is one of the few causes of correctable dementia. Another thing, if you take omega fatty three fatty acids, it can help with prevent dementias. Ginkgo doesn't help, by the way. Studies show it doesn't. Curcumin from curry doesn't help. some of these things do. Checking your thyroid, make sure you... I had a patient years ago that came to me that was had Alzheimer's, and her thyroid was off base. We corrected her thyroid, and she didn't get rid of her Alzheimer's, but she markedly changed her functional status two or three steps. Things like that. Sometimes, if you have lots of money and you want to do this... There's a gene called APOE, epsilon 4 gene. Literally, if you have this gene, it's something like 80 times risk of dementia. Now, I'm not sure if you have it, what you're going to do about it, kind of thing. That becomes a difficult thing. You know, if you've got it, what can you do about it? But if you've got that gene, and we're now able to test for that, it costs probably about $3,000 to do that. you can see if you've got a predictor for that. Down syndrome patients have a gene defect that literally increases amyloid in the brain, causes more dementia. another thing that's important, and this is something we don't, we always say eat lots of fresh fruits and vegetables, and it's been shown that a diet with fresh fruits and vegetables literally lowers the risk of dementia. But the real thing is that we think that it's probably a folate or folic acid deficiency that they're really treating with the fresh fruits and vegetables. So you want to make sure that your folic acid levels are normal. And the simple way is, you know, I tell people, just eat a green leafy salad once a day, and you'll have no trouble with that. A selenium deficiencies, we've mentioned that before, is important. we've talked about, you know, take a Brazil nut every day, and you have lots of selenium as long as you absorb it. And the other thing that's is starting to show up is a treatment, replacement of hormones with bioidentical hormones can help a lot in brain function, an awful lot.
There's hardly anything that what'd you call them, degradable?
Bioidentical hormones.
Identical, that's right. Bioidentical hormones get fixed. We got Mel on the line. He's got a question for you. Doc, Mel, how are you?
Good. Thank you for taking my call. I've got a quick question about autism. I have a granddaughter who has it, and she's high functioning. We were fortunate enough to catch it at an early age, and I know there's been a lot of questions as to where it comes from. And I was listening to a gentleman on the radio a couple of weeks ago, and he had done extensive research, and I think he mentioned glyphosates. And
glyphosates.
Inside, I guess, Roundup's one of the big
sure.
ones. And he said he went back and had a direct pour, direct online on the as the usage of Roundup went up, the occurrence of autism also went up. Do you see any correlation there?
You know, it's interesting. I have actually looked at those studies also, and there is definitely what he says is true. Now, there's a you have to be careful, Mel. What is true, you know, is that the incidence of glycophosphate use and the incidence of Alzheimer's track all very, very closely.
Really?
But is there a causal relationship? I don't know that we know that yet. I mean, another thing that's come up about these kind of things, for instance, the amount of different things like arsenic and different things like that that are poisoning that in rice, for instance, or different foodstuffs that you can show that there's a causal relationship with some of these toxic minerals. But we don't know if they're causing it, all right?
Yeah.
It's difficult. Dr. Cowan, who is our PhD psychologist in the office that looks after does our counseling, his PhD was in autism and this kind of things. And it is amazing. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Some of the things that come up that he knows about treating Alzheimer's or autism with natural things. It's amazing the stuff that's out there.
Right.
The hard part, Mel, with these kind of things is autism is what's called a broad spectrum disorder. In fact, I suspect, we don't know this, and this is just me talking, but I suspect that we're going to find out 20, 30 years from now that it's not one illness, but there's a multiple types of autism, and it's really an autism spectrum. And that different things are causing it. All right, it's not just one thing. I mean, that's really if we're starting to look at dementias today, the newest science in dementias, we've been always looking for the one gold, the magic thing, what causes all these plaques and these amyloid depositions and all that. And probably the newest idea about dementias, it's a sort of the same idea that it's a multifactorial disease, and there's probably 30 different things that are. Could be all parts of it. Could be one or five or ten of them, or all of them, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I suspect the same thing that as we go on with medicine, learn more. I suspect the same thing will happen with autism. But at the time, I don't think we can say. I don't know that we can say for sure that there is a relationship.
Well, it's creating a couple of problems here. When I'm in my 60s, when I was a kid, most people lived till 60 or 70, and you didn't see the occurrences of Alzheimer's and dementia that much. And another concern I have is who's going to take care of all these autistic kids? They're with families now. When the family expires, there's going to be a lot of kids out there with no homes, and that's something else we have to think about.
Yes. Well, and the other thing, too, there's a major... I think last year at one of the conferences I went to in Vegas, a guy gave a talk just about what you're talking about. There are some major public health issues. What's going to happen 25 years down the road with, number one, with the aging population, and number two, with all these illnesses like autism and all that, a lot of gene defects. Now, it used to be that 50 years ago, if you had a gene defect, we didn't have cures for them, and you'd die early, and those genes would die out. And that's how how we looked. I was going to say looked after them. I'm not sure that's the right way to say, but that's how Mother Nature intended it to be. All right. Well, today we're taking a lot of these gene defects and these problems, and we're treating them. So we're just ending up propagating them more and more in society. And what happens 50 years from now? And those are public health decisions or debates that I don't know we have answer for. And in fact, I don't think we do at this point. And where do you go from here? There is no easy
quality
answer.
Of life, too,
Okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you, doctor. I appreciate your time. Have a good
All right. Day. Merry Christmas, Mel, and best of all to you. All right?
Take care, buddy. Bye-bye. So there's maybe a relationship to a weed killer to autism?
Well, what's,
is that what I got
out
of that?
Yes, essentially Roundup. Glycophosphates are really? Roundup. Yeah.
That one specifically.
Yes. Yeah, and there's
how do they propose? Is a kid somehow ingesting it? Or?
Well, it's a much more complex.
Or the mom?
First of all, we don't know for sure that this is causing. What is true, what he said, there's a definite line, the rate of autism versus and the rate of use of glycophosphates. I mean, it parallels, all right? There's no question that's true. Now, it's a totally different thing to say glycophosphates used caused that, all right?
Because they used to say that the flu virus the
mercury things cause autism, all right? There's a lot of evidence for that. We don't really know that for sure. Now, that said, all of the flu vaccines mandated by federal law now for the last 2 years have no mercury in them. All right. So it was done so that that would not be an issue anymore for flu vaccine. That's not true for all immunizations, but the trend is going that way.
But for flu shots,
there is no more mercury in the flu shots. So you don't have to worry about the flu shot causing autism. And that was done specifically to address those issues.
Wow, Doc, I appreciate you coming in today. And I'll make an appointment, come in to see you here in the next a week or two. And you should make an appointment, too, to go by and see, meet all the folks over at the practice. The number is 871-3300, 871-3300. And you get in there and you see the operation, how it works. You're going to want to join the practice and make Dr. Mensink your family's doctor. 871-3300 is the number, 871-3300.
You know, Jazz, probably the thing that's amazing right now is open enrollment. We have a lot of people joining. Literally, if you're getting killed with insurance prices, okay,
right.
The prices are going up, the deductibles are going, everything is bad. But literally, if you get a health savings account, and if you come to the office, we'll show you how. But if you get a health savings account with a Affordable Care Act compliant high deductible plan, maybe $10,000 deductible, and you buy the practice, we can give you better care with probably saving up to 30% to 40%, 50%.
Wow.
It's amazing. And that's one of the reasons why we're
everybody's going. Deductible has gone up.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They say, well, I can't even afford to have some simple, MRI done.
Yeah. Well, Jasmine, it's going exactly the opposite. December 1st, we just announced 85% of all your blood tests are covered from tier 2 and 3.
That's
awesome. Exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
Everything's getting better. I don't know if getting better is the right word to say it, but there's more value.
You're right. Yeah.
And we did that essentially to give more value to our patients.
Dr. Jan Mensink, ladies and gentlemen, the practice, 871-3300. Doc, great seeing you, and I will see you here soon.
Merry Christmas, Jan.
Merry Christmas to you, sir.